Part 1. Fundamentals and Reality. Chapter 1. Getting in looks easier than it is. 5,000 units, sitting in a warehouse, and not one of them can be sold. The sample looked perfect, the price was great, the math worked out to the cent. And then one tiny detail came back wrong from the factory, and the whole shipment turned into very, very expensive cardboard. Nobody plans for that moment, but almost everybody gets one. So, let's talk about the business that looks the easiest from the outside and humbles people the fastest. And honestly, I love this part. From where you're standing, importing looks suspiciously simple. You pick a product, you message a factory, you slap your logo on it. A few weeks later, congratulations, you're a brand. Buy low, sell high, repeat. And that picture holds up beautifully, right up until the first time something doesn't go to plan. Which it will, not might. Will. Here's how it always starts. A product looks promising, the factory price seems amazing, the math checks out, all clean, all logical, almost too clean. Because here's the part nobody tells you. Most of those lovely numbers aren't built on experience, they're built on hope. Hope about quality, hope about communication, hope that the factory hits your deadline and reads your spec the way you actually meant it. And reality, oh, reality loves correcting hope, usually faster than you'd like. Now here's the thing, and this is the part people miss. Importing doesn't mean you make more mistakes than anyone else. It just means your mistakes get expensive. Big difference. A typo in an email? Annoying. One small detail produced wrong. On 5,000 units, that's not a flaw. That's a pallet of inventory nobody will ever buy, sitting in a warehouse, quietly judging you. And it only gets better. The further a mistake travels through your process, the more it costs to fix. Catch a bad spec on day one? Cheap. Catch it when it's already on a container ship halfway across the ocean? Yeah, that one stinks. Which brings us to the single most expensive misunderstanding in this whole business. Most beginners assume the factory is responsible for the product. And it makes sense, right? They built the thing, they should own it. In theory, sure. In practice, no. The second you import those goods, you become the one putting them on the market. And legally, that makes you the responsible party. Product safety, liability, regulations, all of it lands right on your desk, not the factory's, yours. So write this one down. The factory produces. You are responsible. Say it out loud if you have to. I wait. Now, the full legal machinery behind that one sentence, that's a serious chunk of the book on its own. Here you just need the principle burned in. The responsibility is yours. Okay, now my personal favorite. The myth I really want to kill early. The sweet little belief that a good factory automatically gives you a good product. Experience disagrees. Strongly. Quality is never the work of one party. It's a system. Clear specs, clear communication, requirements you can actually verify, consistent control. Pull out any one of those pieces and you've just left room for interpretation. And in a factory, room for interpretation always gets used. Which brings me to the word that has caused more gray hairs in this industry than anything else. Communication. And instead of explaining it, let me just show you. Picture a totally normal little exchange. Hey, quick one. Can we make a small adjustment to the handle? No problem. Perfect. Thank you so much. Two words. No problem. Feels like a win, doesn't it? But here's the trap. No problem can mean we made the exact change you asked for, or it can mean we changed something completely different that we personally felt was an improvement. And both of them show up in the exact same packaging. You will not find out which version you got until you open the box. The problem was never in what got said. It was in how it got understood. And meanwhile, this whole time, the clock is running.
Most calculations obsess over purchase price and margin and treat time like it's free. It is not. Delays come from questions, corrections, production problems, shipping bottlenecks, last-minute regulatory tweaks, and every one of them feeds straight into your cash flow. Your money just sits there, tied up, earning nothing, waiting. Time is the most expensive line in the whole operation. You just never see it on the invoice. So here's the one mindset that separates the people who build a real business from the people who run one painful experiment and quietly disappear. Mistakes are not an emergency. They are part of the system. The question was never if something goes wrong. The question is when and how ready you are when it does. That's not pessimism, by the way. That's just a weather forecast. So here's your one line for this chapter. Importing isn't complicated. but it does not forgive naive assumptions. Expect everything to go to plan, and reality will correct you. Expect problems, build for them, and suddenly you're working a whole lot closer to how this thing actually goes. Now, you think people fail because importing is hard. They don't. They fail for a handful of reasons that are almost embarrassingly predictable and completely avoidable. Chapter 2. Why most people fail. Let's clear something up right away. Most people don't fail at importing because it's hard. They fail because they pull the wrong lever, over and over, with great enthusiasm. Here's the most common one. Almost everyone starts in the exact same place. The product. Which product sells? Which niche is hot? Where's the gap in the market? Feels logical. Feels smart. It's the first strategic mistake. Because a good product alone is not an advantage. It's the ticket to get in the door. That's it. The real game is everything after you pick it. Purchasing, quality, communication, logistics, positioning, sales. The product is the most visible lever and the weakest one in the whole system. And people polish it for months. Number 2. The YouTube problem. And I say this with love. There's a mountain of tutorials, case studies, blueprints out there. Beautiful stuff. Here's the catch. They almost all show you the ones that worked, the clean version. What's missing? The failed attempts, the wrong calls, the tiny deviations that quietly turned into big problems. So you walk away thinking the process is neat, plannable, repeatable. In reality, it's messy, it's detail-driven, and the details that bite you never make it into the video. Because they're boring to film and painful to admit. 3. The calculation. Oh, the calculation. At the start, every calculation looks gorgeous. Purchase price, shipping, fees, margin looks healthy, profit looks real. What's quietly missing? Scrap, quality problems, rework, delays eating your cash flow, marketing you can't predict, price pressure from the competition. The original math is rarely flat out wrong. It's just optimistic. And optimism is not a load-bearing wall in this business. 4. Quality gets assumed instead of managed. People believe that if you explain it clearly once, the factory just produces it right. Convenient. And wrong. Without specs, controls, and feedback loops, you don't get a quality standard. You get an interpretation. Quality is not where you start, it's what you get from control. 5. And this one's expensive. Problems spotted too late. The killer is rarely the mistake itself, it's when you notice it. A small detail wrong in production? Fixable. Early. Cheap. The same detail noticed at the port? Now it's a logistics problem. Noticed after that? A financial one. People ride the it'll be fine train for ages, right up until it is very clearly not fine. And by then the ticket costs 10 times more. 6. Capital, deployed like a man at a casino. One product, one order, one big bet, everything on it. Looks efficient, it's actually incredibly fragile. One thing goes wrong and you've got zero room to react. The experienced ones think in scenarios, not single bets. They plan for the deviation before it shows up.
7. Impatience. The model looks fast, so people try to run it fast. Rush decisions, skip checks, ignore details. Saves time today. Costs you a multiple of that time later. Importing is not a sprint. Treat it like one and you will trip. Reliably.
And 8. Competition. Underestimated. People assume a good product just generates demand. The market is rarely empty. And when it is, it doesn't stay empty long. Visibility, trust, positioning, that's what decides. Lean on the product alone and you end up competing on price. And price wars, nobody really wins those. So here's the real takeaway. Most people don't fail from one big dramatic mistake. They fail from a pile of small ones that feed each other. Wrong focus, too much optimism, no control, complexity they didn't see coming. And unstable systems don't break right away. They work until they don't. The difference is almost never knowledge. It's execution under real conditions, which conveniently is the rest of this book. Next up, the first real fork in the road. Two ways to play this game that look similar and could not be more different.
Chapter 3. Trade goods versus private label. Alright, two ways to sell products in this business. Trade goods and private label. Same goal. Buy a thing, sell it for more. Completely different realities underneath. And if you don't understand the difference, don't worry. The margin will explain it to you later. Let's start with the easy one, trade goods. These are products that already exist. You buy them, you resell them basically as is. Generic stuff or branded goods through a distributor. The big appeal? Speed. No development, no design headaches, no endless back and forth with a factory.
The product's already there, you just step into the selling. And the risk looks lower too. The thing's already on the market, so there's data, demand, pricing, quality, you can see it, feel safe. And then the catch shows up, quietly, reliably. Little differentiation, high price pressure, total interchangeability. When five sellers offer the exact same product, what decides? Price. And price competition isn't a strategy, it's a slow bleed. So trade goods are a fantastic way in, just rarely a way to stay. Now the other one, private label. Private label means you take an existing product and make it yours. Could be light, logo, packaging. Could be real product changes. The magic word here is control. You decide how it looks, how it's positioned, how it's perceived. That creates differentiation, and differentiation is what gives you a stable margin. But control is not free. More coordination with the factory, longer development, more ways to get it wrong, more capital tied up. One badly defined detail can send the whole production run sideways, and unlike trade goods, there's no reference product to catch you. Private label isn't an upgrade, it's a different game entirely.
And here's the cleanest way to see the difference. One word, interchangeability. Trade goods are almost completely interchangeable. One seller drops out, another slides in, the customer doesn't even notice. Private label breaks that. Not completely, but enough to step out of the pure price war. It doesn't guarantee you win, it just gives you a shot at differentiating at all. Quick myth while we're here. Trade goods are safe, private label is risky. Half true. Trade goods, stable process, thin margins. Private label, more moving parts, way more upside. The real question isn't risk versus safety, it's this. Do you want a business that runs on efficiency or one that runs on differentiation? So when does each make sense? Trade goods, great for a fast entry, for testing demand, when capital's tight. Private label, interesting once you actually understand what sells, when you're thinking long term, when you want control over product and brand. Most good import businesses start with trade goods and drift into private label, not on principle, because it eventually becomes necessary. Bottom line, trade goods are easy to start, hard to defend. Private label is harder to start, easier to scale. One is commerce, the other is building an asset. And assets are the only thing anyone ever really wants to pay for in the end. Now, the moment you go private label, you're suddenly running specs, samples, and quality control like a real operation. And that is where this book earns its keep. We'll get deep into all of it. For now, just know which game you're choosing. But none of this works without three things lining up. Capital, time, and expectations. And those three almost never line up on their own.
Chapter 4. Capital, time, and expectations. Three factors decide how an import project actually plays out. Capital, time, expectations. On their own, each one's manageable. Together, they decide whether you grow steadily or fold early. And here's the trick. The problem is almost never that one of them is missing. It's that they're out of proportion to each other. Too little capital against sky-high expectations. Too little time for too complex a project. Bad decisions don't come from a bad plan. They come from a shaky foundation. Let's start with capital. And the favorite beginner move. The calculation that begins and ends with the product price. Cost of goods, shipping, a markup, and output. A beautiful clean margin. Here's what that misses. The purchase price is one slice of the capital you actually tie up. You also need money for development, samples, revisions, quality control, logistics, delays. And that capital is locked away for months before a single euro comes back. Every delay stretches that window and cranks up the pressure. A tight budget only works if everything goes to plan. And we've already established how often that happens. Now time. Most planning treats time like a fixed constant. Production takes X weeks, shipping takes Y days, then sales start. Understandable. Rarely true. Every step can slip. Questions delay decisions. Revisions stretch production. Bottlenecks push delivery. A regulatory requirement nobody saw coming shows up to the party. And delays don't just add up, they compound. They throw off the whole sequence. A project that slips a few weeks can lose serious strategic value. Miss a season, and the math changes completely. And the sneaky one, expectations. Because expectations quietly drive every decision you make. Someone who expects results fast makes different calls than someone planning long term. And unrealistic expectations lead straight to shortcuts. Quality control trimmed. Specs left half defined. Regulatory stuff shoved to later. Short term, it looks efficient. Long term, it loads the gun. Expectations aren't a soft factor. They decide directly how much risk you take on, whether you notice it or not. and now watch them interact, because this is the whole point. Limited capital cranks up the pressure for fast results. Time pressure pushes you into rushed, simplified decisions. And expectations? They stubbornly stay high the entire time. That imbalance, that's one of the most common reasons projects die. Launched too fast, budgeted too tight, judged against the wrong assumptions. Not one mistake, a chain of them, all made under pressure. So here's the part people get backwards. Being realistic about these three isn't a handicap. It's the edge. Budget enough capital, build in time buffers, set expectations you can actually live with. That doesn't make you slower, it makes you stable. You spot problems early, while they're still cheap to fix. Bottom line, capital, time, and expectations aren't three separate dials. They're one system. Knock it out of balance and problems are guaranteed. Balance it on purpose and you start from a far stronger position. Realism here isn't pessimism. It's just planning that actually works. Okay, last stop in the fundamentals. The business models themselves, laid out side by side. Because picking the wrong one for the wrong reason is a very popular and very expensive hobby. Chapter 5. Business models at a glance. Let's put the models on the table, side by side. At a glance, they all look the same. Buy a product, sell a product. Under the hood, they're basically different sports that happen to share a stadium. And people pick one based on a trend or a gut feeling, then act shocked when the margin sends them a bill. Model 1, the trade model, reselling. You buy existing products and resell them. The value you add is in procurement, logistics, distribution, not the product. The upside is speed. Products exist, supply chains exist, you're in the market fast. For getting started, genuinely great. The catch, you're wide open to competition because the identical product is being sold by other people too. It works as long as your process is efficient and your margin holds. But there's nothing to defend. Somebody offers the same thing 2 euros cheaper and no amount of branding saves you. Easy to enter, just as easy to be replaced. Model 2, private label. You build on an existing product but add your own stuff, branding, packaging, functional tweaks. The goal? Stand out, at least partly. Now you can actually shape pricing, positioning, perception. You're not just a merchant anymore, you're starting to build a brand. But the workload jumps. Development, coordination, quality control, all heavier. And every wrong call costs more, because there's no identical product out there telling you if you're on track. Private label isn't short-term, it's a strategic decision. Treat it like reselling with a logo and you'll be disappointed. Take it seriously and you build something that lasts. Model 3. Original development. ODM OEM territory. Here the product isn't adapted, it's conceived from scratch. The factory produces to your spec. The reward is maximum differentiation. Your product isn't directly comparable to anything, so price pressure drops and your market position gets strong. The flip side, complexity goes through the roof. Development, testing, validation, all bigger. And mistakes hit harder, because there's no reference product to benchmark against. This one needs experience, capital, and patience. Walk in without a foundation and you're not playing in the big game. You're just standing in the parking lot wondering why the tickets cost so much. And in real life, you get hybrids. Companies start with trade goods, develop their first private label products, then drift toward original development. Not on principle, out of necessity. Experience grows, the hunger for control grows, and the limits of pure trade get really obvious. Hybrids aren't really a separate model. They're just what a surviving import business naturally turns into. And here's the big misconception to kill. There is no objectively best model. Each has its place. Depends on your capital, experience, risk appetite, time horizon. Problems don't come from picking a model. They come from wrong expectations about what that model can do. Trade model fails when you expect differentiation from it. Private label fails when you run it like pure reselling. Original development fails when you confuse experience with enthusiasm. The model sets the rules of the game. Ignore them and you lose, no matter which one you chose.
So, that's the foundation, the whole map. You now know why this business humbles people, why most of them fail, the two ways to play it, the three factors that have to line up, and the models you can actually choose from. What you've got now is the map. The rest of this book is the territory. Every part from here gets practical. How to pick a product that isn't garbage. How to find a factory that won't ghost you. How to keep quality from quietly eroding. How to not get flattened at customs. The real operational, this is how it actually works version. It's all in the book, step by step. And next we get into the part everyone thinks they're good at, choosing the product. Spoiler, most of the products people fall in love with are not good products. I'll show you why. See you in part 2.